And good evening and welcome to Outbeat Collage Out in the Arts. I'm Michaela Kennan, and this is your voice for the LGBT community right here in the North Bay. Join me in conversation tonight as I turn the tables on my co-host Gary Carnevale, talk with him about his newly released documentary on the life story of transgender artist Michelle Rocking Horse Garcia. Later on, we'll meet minds with Irv Kirschbaum and Barbara Hirschfield of the Shambhala Meditation Center, talking about a special event on Buddhist meditation for the LGBT community. It's a powerful evening of personal stories and the art of being human right here on Outbeat Collage. Stay with us. Back. You are tuned to Outbeat Collage here on KRCB Radio. We opened up the show with Siren Song, that being the music of LGBT artist Mark Barnes from his latest release, Alive. In studio with me is Mary Moore Campagna on the engineering boards. And right now, let's go to Greg Moralia with the Outbeat News.
Say.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for Sunday, October 21st, 2012. A Roman Catholic priest in Italy used International Coming Out Day to come out as gay on his Facebook page. On October 11th, Don Mario Bonfanti, 41, a priest in the Italian region of Lombardy, wrote, quote, "I am gay, or better, I am happily a gay priest." This according to the Gay Star News. Bonfanti wrote, "Truth makes us free, so said Jesus." But strangely, the church denies this sentence. Catholic LGBT people must come out. They have to accept the truth. While it's unclear whether the Italian Catholic Church has formally responded to Bonfanti's coming out, a Facebook group with nearly 2,000 members has sprung up titled, "I'm with Don Mario." Details surrounding Bonfanti's announcement are somewhat scant, but news reports are that he had a run-in with the diocese last March when he was barred from a parish in Brianza for supporting same-sex unions. And here in the United States, a group of 63 former Catholic priests with a total of more than 800 years of clerical service announced this last Thursday their support for Referendum 74, which would make Washington the seventh state in America to support same-sex marriage. They will take issue with the state's four Roman Catholic bishops who are campaigning against marriage equality with pastoral letters, policy statements, and videos. Seattle Archbishop Peter Sartain has issued both a pastoral letter and a video and supplied material to pass out in parishes. Bishop Joseph Tyson of Yakima on Sunday claimed that Referendum 74, quote, "jeopardizes freedom rather than expands it and endangers our religious freedoms and the right of conscience." In a statement released last week, the former Catholic priest said, "We are uneasy with the aggressive efforts of the Catholic bishops to oppose Referendum 74 and want to support the 71% of the Catholics, according to the Public Religious Research Institute, who support civil marriage for gays as a valid Catholic position." The former priests are following in the footsteps of a group of retired and resigned priests in Minnesota who have taken on Minneapolis-St. Paul Archbishop John Nienstedt. Minnesota is voting on a state constitutional amendment that would enshrine marriage as between a man and a woman in their state constitution. Nienstedt has warned active priests to keep silent if they have reservations. The church has poured in more than $1 million into the campaign for this amendment. And from New York, on Thursday this week, a federal appeals court in New York became the nation's second to strike down the Defense of Marriage Act, finding that the Clinton-era law's denial of federal benefits to married same-sex couples is unconstitutional. The Divisive Act, which was passed in 1996, bars federal recognition of such marriages and says other states cannot be forced to recognize them. The Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals determined Thursday that the federal law violates the Constitution's Equal Protection Clause, ruling in favor of a widow named Edith Windsor, an 82-year-old lesbian who sued the federal government for charging her more than $363,000 in estate taxes after being denied the benefit of spousal deductions. Dennis Jacobs, a conservative judge in New York, wrote, quote, "Homosexuals are not in a position to adequately protect themselves from the discriminatory wishes of a majoritarian public." A federal appeals court in Boston made a similar ruling in May, but the moves are considered largely symbolic as an issue that is expected to be eventually taken up by the United States Supreme Court. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Tuesday, October 23rd, from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m., the Santa Rosa Senior Group will meet at the Glacier Center in Santa Rosa. And also on Tuesday at 6:30 p.m., the Transgender North Bay Group will meet at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street. And on Thursday, October 25th at 6:30 p.m., the Men's Peer-to-Peer HIV Group will meet at Face-to-Face, 873 2nd Street in Santa Rosa. And on Saturday, October 27th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., Food for Thought, the Sonoma County AIDS Food Bank, will host a Thoughtful Harvest, a tour of six River Valley wineries and a chance to meet their owners and winemakers. There will be samples of fermenting juice, wine tasting, harvest food to nibble on, and the possibility to help punch down fermenting wines. You can learn more at fftfoodbank.org. And also on Saturday from 7:30 to 11 p.m., Positive Images will host their Queer Coming. This year's title is Marry the Night at Monroe Hall, 1400 West College Avenue in Santa Rosa. All lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning young people ages 14 to 24 are welcome to this substance-free event. ID is required to get in. Refreshments will be available, and you can get tickets through the Positive Images office, 312 Chin Street. You can learn more from their website at pauseimages.org. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Morelia. Now back to Outbeat Collage with Gary Carnevale and Michaela Cannon.
We are, we are, we are, we are, we are. Joy between the tears. Whoa, whoa. We are what others sometimes fear. We are San Francisco queers. Whoa, whoa. And we're gonna. Market Street.
And that is the music of Michelle Rocking Horse Garcia. That is one of the title tracks from a new documentary release entitled Tipping the Scales. And Michelle is the subject of a newly released documentary produced and directed by none other than my co-host and filmmaker, Gary Carnevale. Gary happens to be in the Midwest this evening, and so we're going to be talking with him live on the phone all the way from Chicago way. Hey, Gary, are you there?
I'm here. Hello.
Excellent. Excellent. Do you miss us?
I do, of course.
Excellent. You knew you had to say that, didn't you?
And I mean it.
Yes, I know. Well, first of all, let's really distinguish what a documentary is. You know, we hear the term all the time, but when we say documentary, what do we mean? And what do you intend to produce by using the documentary?
Oh, you know, documentaries have been become much more popular. They really had their heyday sort of in the late 60s. They've been around really since the beginning of film. But in the late 60s, they really started to become more popular with the general sort of movie-going public than just sort of academics. And there were new ways to tell stories through a documentary that made them so much more interesting. And you know, with handheld cameras and all sort of access you could get with newer equipment, you could really get into the middle of the action. And you know, sometimes it was telling someone's life story, but sometimes it was showing an event. And you know, it's a great way to explore someone's life by putting together photographs and footage of them from the past, and capturing them in the past and in the present, and telling their stories. And it's meant a lot for the LGBT audience, I think, because there are stories of LGBT folks that have gotten lost throughout the years, and young people will see documentaries, you know, that will cover something like ACT UP and things that happened not that long ago, and will have no idea about what life was like, what it was like to be gay in the 50s,
right,
what it was like to be, you know, there in the middle of the AIDS crisis. And you know, a documentary really can put you right in the middle of it and introduce you to people that you would, you know, obviously never have a chance to have met.
Mm-hmm. And so there's a historical aspect to it.
There is. But there can be. It can take apart a subject that's happening right now. You know, we think of Michael Moore's films.
Uh-huh.
Which have been hugely popular. Al Gore produced The Inconvenient Truth several years ago that really made people aware of global warming and climate change. And, you know, it's nice that cable stations like HBO and Showtime really put a lot of money into documentaries. And, of course, people are watching so many more of their films and getting their entertainment through cable news, through Netflix, and it's so much easier to access documentaries because there really are fewer movie theaters and there are fewer screens that are, you know, set aside for foreign films or for documentaries because they tend not to make as much money as huge Hollywood production.
Sure, the big box office.
Right, right.
Uh-huh.
But that doesn't mean they can't be big box office. I mean, Michael Moore has, you know, there are a number of filmmakers who are covering really important issues, and it can be very fast. You know, we learned about fracking through Gasland,
mm-hmm.
you know, a few years ago, and that is still happening right now. That was, you know, something people had no idea about, and whether they saw the film or people were reporting on the film, it's almost the same. They may be covered in newspaper articles, the subject, but, when in depth for an hour and a half or 2 hours on one subject, you really know, you can really understand what's going on concerning a subject or concerning a person's life.
And a picture really does emit 1,000 words, doesn't it?
Oh, at least.
Yeah.
And if a picture emits 1,000 words, then a documentary can
be responsible
for millions.
Yeah. So why did you feel then that a documentary format was the best way to tell Michelle's story?
Michelle's story is incredible. To think that, you know, she graduated high school in the early to mid 60s and realized she was transgender, it's hard for us to put ourselves back in that time. And even her first attempt at transitioning was when she was 18, just out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily she lived in an urban center, so she was in Los Angeles. And had access and had doctors who were like, oh, we understand. We can provide the drugs for you to start, and we can help you on your way, and we can get you into groups. When you hear a fascinating story, I've worked in TV and in films and have done short subjects, But this is really my first documentary. I was so taken with Michelle as a person and her story. And you know, as a gay man, I can say, you know, really never having gotten to be close friends with a transgender person, you know, as they're mm-hmm. members of our community. But until, you know, you can sort of call a transgender person your friend, and when you feel completely comfortable and you can really delve into their lives. I think, you know, there's that separation between the LGBT, that it's certainly a political issue, it certainly comes up within the community, you know, that can be fractured. So I thought, boy, it's a nice subject. When I show the film and show it to friends, and they're just like, oh, I have no idea. I had no idea this was happening this far back, or what a transgender person goes through physically, or, you know, what it means, these different sort of classifications, cross-dresser, transgender, intersex. Mm-hmm. The terms have changed throughout civilization, but the concept is always the same, that one person feels they identify with a sex other than what they were assigned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And isn't it interesting that that T part of LGBT remains still somewhat mysterious and detached from our sense of what it's about? We hear a lot about the L and
right.
the G part of it.
L and the G, right, exactly. And one might say people don't understand much about bisexuality either.
Right.
You know, have these preconceived notions. And I think that's true with transgender.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we still bring some of that internalized homophobia with us when it comes to people that are still different. You know, as a lesbian, as a gay man, we think, boy, you know, I don't understand that. I can accept it, but it's hard for me to sort of not defend a transgender, but to really empathize and to really say, boy, this is such a different experience. But you know, we're all human, and you know, these are members of our community, and we should accept and really try to understand what they're going through.
Mm-hmm. And the film actually does help that. I mean, there's a whole education process that comes out in the film as we go through it with Michelle.
Right. And over many years, because it was, I don't want to give too much of the film away,
right.
but it took Michelle a number of years to fully transition, and that included time that she was married and had a family and really struggled with spirituality, and a number of issues, as you can imagine.
And her culture.
Right, exactly, which is another issue, and which is another thing that just makes Michelle's story fascinating, that, that you know, she grew up Mexican-American, Latin-American, but then sort of realized she was also Native American, Matisse.
What a combination, yeah.
And with that, soon after realizing or embracing her Native American heritage, she realized that there was this concept of the two-spirit individual in most Northern American indigenous tribes, which has since sort of been lost, but they were transgender women. And
mm-hmm.
they were revered and thought of not someone to alienate, but someone that was blessed with certain powers and was revered within the tribe rather than shunned. Again, as Michelle, who then was Michelle or Mike or Aaron Greyhorse, she learned about this two-spirit as, you know, realizing, wow, not only am I transgender, feeling that I would like to be a woman, rather than male, but also there's an important part of this, of my culture, that embraced transgender women.
So the documentary is entitled Tipping the Scales.
Yes.
And roughly how long did it take you to put the whole thing together?
Oh, over 2 years. Over 2 years. It's a labor of love, and Michelle and I have worked very closely together. Michelle serves as co-producer, and the editing process is really where many documentaries come to life, because as you're filming, you sort of have an idea, okay, I'm going to tell this individual's story. But you come up with these new aspects and think, boy, we should go with this. This is really interesting that I didn't know personally, or this is something I think the audience needs to see, needs to learn more about. And you know, as sort of the bonus, Michelle's life is also told through her music, as
right.
male and both female. So there's a very interesting element to the film that, you know, we get to hear from Michelle, both as male, both as female, telling different stories, telling of her experiences through her music, which is wonderful. You were playing some of her music, and
right.
I know you had Michelle on your show last week. She's a very talented woman, a wonderful songwriter, a wonderful musician, and certainly has many stories to tell.
Absolutely, and a lot of wisdom from her experience.
Absolutely, absolutely. She's right. She's a fascinating woman, and we met there at KRCB, and she worked there and became a member of Outbeat Radio, and we got to be close, and she had just released her San Francisco Queer CD, and I thought, oh, let's make a music video. I've done this before, and she was thrilled, and we made a really fun video that's now part of the film. And thought, boy, why don't we go on from here? Let's tell more of your story. She was in the process. She said, oh, I get started to write my memoirs, and, you know, we would sit and chat about her life, and I thought, you know, let's tell your story. Let's do it. And one of her songs was named Tipping the Scales, and I'm like, boy, you know, when you're trying to search for the search for the title of a film or the title of a CD, you know,
right.
or title of a book, and you're, you know, you struggle and struggle and struggle, and you're like, oh, there it is, Tipping the Scales between male and female, and yeah.
Yeah, so it all comes together.
Right, right.
So the Tipping the Scales then actually premieres, world premiere.
World premiere.
A couple of weeks.
Saturday, November 3rd at San Francisco LGBT Center.
Yay.
Yes, a great space, the Rainbow Room. Nice Saturday afternoon. It's going to start at 3 p.m. Tickets are $15, and it's a partial benefit from the center. I know a lot of people there in the North Bay maybe haven't even been to the center. It's a beautiful space. It's been open, I believe, 6 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're filling up the Rainbow Room, and Michelle's going to perform, which will be wonderful. She'll do a solo set before the film, and we'll have a little chat afterwards and just make a fun afternoon of it.
So, sure, she'll be there for a meet and greet and hang out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good.
And they're selling her wonderful CDs and T-shirts, tickets are available at Brown Paper Tickets. If you go to Brown Paper Tickets and type in Tipping the Scales, it usually pops up, I think, right away. The event number is 269675. Or you can just pop in. We're hoping to sell out. We're doing really well selling tickets, and it'll be a great chance to meet Michelle and then see her story on the big screen.
Good. And then and Saturday, November 3rd, it's 3 p.m. Tickets are $15. That's just phenomenal. It's very affordable, very practical. And
yes. Yes, right. And a little concert.
Yeah.
On top of it. So, yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's a story we want people to experience and hope to possibly have some screenings in the North Bay. But we hope folks will come out to the city for a fun afternoon and see our nice film.
Good. Well, it's a darn good reason to do that. And so want to thank you for taking some time out. I know that you're there with friends and family, but appreciate the fact that you've taken some time out, and it's been a great and passionate project on your plate for a long time. So,
oh, it has. It has. And please come see the film and see Michelle's story.
There you go. And it's www.tippingthescalesmovie.com.
That's right. That's right. That's the website for the film. Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, my friend, for being an instrument and a luminary for our LGBT community. You have a great time back there with your family, okay?
Thank you, Michaela. We'll see you soon.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It's a lie you're selling, selling me. Yeah, it's a tragic or a magical day.
And welcome back. You are tuned in to Outbeat Collage. I'm Michaela Kennan. And the Santa Rosa Shambhala Meditation Center offers a core curriculum of Shambhala Buddhist teachings, meditation practice sessions, and training in contemplative practices and the traditional arts. This coming Wednesday, October 24th, they'll be offering a special open-to-the-public event specifically for the LGBT community. It's a talk and introduction to Buddhist meditation, a first of its kind, I understand. And here to tell us more about not only the center and the event is Irv Kirschbaum and Barbara Hirschfield. Irv and Barbara, welcome to Outbeat Collage.
Thank you very much.
I'm glad you could make it. So give us a sense, kind of a about us overview of the center and what you do offer to the public.
Okay, well, I think it would be good to just say, to start off, that Shambhala is an international organization, and it's a teachings based on Buddhist teachings that were brought to the West by Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche in 1970. And they're really designed for anyone, whatever religion, whatever belief system they have. It's really a simple approach to being human, how to be human on this earth. And he came to the West, and he seemed to think that we needed some help in that department because he saw people kind of all twisted up and afraid of being who they were. And he brought these Shambhala teachings to the West to help people to just get in touch with themselves and through meditation. Mm-hmm. So that's the basis. And then since then, many, many centers have been developed in all over the world, and here in the Bay Area we have seven centers, and one is in Santa Rosa, and Irv here is from Sonoma. He's the director at Sonoma, and there are five others in San Francisco, Berkeley, and so forth. And the person who's coming on Wednesday is one of the senior teachers, one of the more respected and developed teachers, and his name is Eric Spiegel, and he's a gay man who was appointed by the leader of Shambhala, whose name is Sakyong Mipam Rinpoche, to teach. And there's only a handful, maybe 30 or 40 of these senior teachers, so we're very lucky to have him coming, and he'll be talking about meditation, but especially for the LGBT community.
You got it right. Very good. How did both of you become involved? Irv, how long have you been involved?
I've been involved with the Shambhala community for just over 5 years. My partner and I moved to Sonoma about 6 years ago, actually, and I was looking for a way to deepen my spiritual practice, and visited the Shambhala Center. They were offering a course called Buddhist 101. I didn't know that I was particularly interested in Buddhist teachings, but I wanted the opportunity to learn how to meditate. Mm-hmm. And it's been a really great opportunity to not only deepen my own meditation practice and garner the benefits thereof, but also to become part of a really wonderful community, which is very diverse and very welcoming to the queer community as well. From the very first day, I felt absolutely welcome there. Right at the front door is a statement on cultural diversity and their aspirations to offer this to anyone of any tradition, any background.
Sure.
And since then, I've been very involved in the organization to the degree becoming a director of the center, such as Barbara was in Santa Rosa until recently.
And what has learning to meditate done for you personally?
Oh, well, this is a really great topic because this is exactly, why I would really encourage anyone who's listening to this program to come to the center to learn to meditate, either on this Wednesday, with Charya Spiegel's program, or any of the opportunities to come. Because in meditation, what we're doing is becoming friends with ourselves. We're basically meeting our minds for the first time, many of us. And it can be a little bit of a shock at first because we don't recognize how busy our mind is and how little time we actually take to take a break. And as our teacher Sakya Mipham says, to actually allow our minds to become our allies. But it has actually allowed me to over time to quiet my mind and to develop its natural qualities of strength and clarity, and to allow myself to be more useful to myself in my life, to those I love, and to others, including in my everyday life.
Mm-hmm. And Barbara, how about you?
I've been with Shambhala for 12 years, and my teacher, the person who got me involved, is Pema Chodron, who many people know. She's just a wonderful teacher who brings these teachings down to earth and makes it really practical. And I think for me, meditation allows you to have some space in the midst of all the chaos of your life. The actual technique helps you to come back to yourself and allows you to kind of get a little bit of distance between your reactive mind. And so that helps you in your everyday life with others. It helps you to understand yourself better, and it helps you to appreciate your world, because suddenly your mind isn't always taking you hither and yon and away from the present moment. And the present moment is really where everything is happening.
I hear a lot of people talking about their inability to meditate or slow down long enough to even start a practice like that. What do you say to these people?
I say that you can never really find peace without experiencing your wild mind. There's no way around it. You have to experience that wildness of mind before you can learn to that underneath that wildness is a peaceful, calm place.
A true place.
A true place, yes.
Yeah. I spent the weekend with the teacher who's coming to visit, Acharya Eric Spiegel, and one of the things that really stuck out for me is that he was talking about the nature of our minds in the sense of confusion, because and we talk about the ego in the Shambhala teachings and in Buddhist teachings, but basically to meet that head on and to meet the confusion is actually a blessing in a sense, because that's the path to wisdom. Mm-hmm. It's only through meeting and struggling with our confusion that we can actually come out on the other side and find some peace and clarity and calm.
Sometimes when we think of the word meditation, it conjures up connotations of either a spiritual practice or maybe something far out, kind of woo-woo,
right.
Weird. Yeah. And it's not. It's not connected with any specific spiritual practice at all.
Not necessarily. No, that's the beauty of the Shambhala teachings, is that it's for anyone. And it's based on meditation, and the meditation is just based on if you're a human being and you're breathing. That's the only requirement, because we use the breath to center ourselves. And the misunderstanding always for newcomers is, I'm doing it wrong because I'm thinking. And that is not correct. Your mind thinks. What you're doing is noticing. And what we're cultivating with this practice is beginning to notice how our mind thinks, that it thinks, what it thinks, and not be afraid to look at it. And by noticing, we actually start to settle, and it settles our mind. And so this, would you say spiritual, it's really about being present. And there can be a spiritual component, because for me, spiritual doesn't mean leaving. It means appreciating my world and being here. So that, to me, is spiritual.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And another commonly misunderstood concept is this idea of Buddhist. It's a Buddhist practice, or even the word Buddhist implies that somehow you must be Buddhist. Yes. But you say, I'm Catholic, I'm not Buddhist. You know, how does this work for me? Address that.
Well, of course, we have people from all traditions. My background is Jewish, actually. And, we come to Shambhala from every tradition and from many people who have no interest in, our religious experience or background. And in fact, there's no requirement that you become a Buddhist. Those opportunities might be available to mm-hmm. people who are interested in pursuing them, but it's by no means necessary or a requirement. And
but it is based on the teachings of the Buddha. We don't want to pretend that it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's
right.
Definitely based on the teachings of the Buddha, but to be a Buddhist is not required.
Mm-hmm.
But the teachings of the Buddha are integral as our other wisdom traditions are woven into Shambhala. And Shambhala actually, Chogyam Trungpa, the founder, as I mentioned before, he brought in all different things like the arts and flower arranging and dance and drama. He brought in all different kinds of disciplines to help people access this basic goodness that is everyone's inheritance as a human being. And so I think for this Wednesday and for your audience, the LGBT community, I think this is a great opportunity to be together as a community in this situation of learning to understand just how to be in the world from this point of view.
And talk a little bit about the event specifically. Eric Spiegel will be doing this in San Francisco.
Yes, he's actually doing it in. He's here for several events throughout the Bay Area. He taught a retreat that I attended this past weekend. He's doing the same program targeting the LGBT community in San Francisco tomorrow night. And we're fortunate enough to have invited him, and he consented to come to Santa Rosa and do the program. So the idea is that, of course, we want to invite all of your listeners to attend, but we would like especially to encourage your queer community to come and to join us, because mm-hmm. There's something very special about people coming together who have a shared experience, and they can begin to, because it's not just going to be meditation. There certainly will be meditation instruction and practice, but there will also be talks and discussion mm-hmm. Around topics that concern the people who have actually come. The program is actually called Loneliness, Desire, and Meditation. And I think that Terry Spiegel chose that title because since the LGBT community has a community which is at its basis their sexuality, mm-hmm. These are topics that are going to be closer to their heart, and he'll speak to them, and then other people can bring whatever concerns they have to the practice and to the discussion as well. I mean, the beauty of having a community like this is like everything is included. So not only everyone, but also any life experience, issues, problems that you have, you can bring to the cushion. And that, as I say, is actually your path, your mm-hmm. That you develop upon.
And Eric has done some work with HIV AIDS people, is correct?
Yeah, he lives in New York, and he worked with the community, the AIDS community, and he does a lot of teaching on death and dying as well. And he's also somebody who has worked on Wall Street and has helped investors, so he has a very diverse background. Do you know more about that?
Well, he gave up his career on Wall Street about 10 years ago. He told us this story this weekend. and he decided to make some changes in his life, and he actually moved to a home in upstate New York where he decided that he actually wanted to connect with nature. And so he has a lot of land. He has gardens. He has a meadow. He has a pond, And he told us at length about the experience of connecting with nature. And actually, this was beautiful because Trungpa Rinpoche actually talks a lot, our founding teacher, mm-hmm. talked a lot about that being a very important way for us to access our fundamental nature that he refers to as basic goodness. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure that this will be one of the major mm-hmm. themes in the program.
I love the idea of thinking of meditation as a way to access your true self, versus just a kind of a woo-woo practice or sitting there oming or something like that, which, again, is something that a lot of people think of when yeah. they hear the word meditation. Tell me about what is called the Way of Shambhala. You teach classes, maybe a series of
actually,
4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, Irv and I are actually teaching right now the beginning class called Meditation in Everyday Life in Sonoma, and I just finished teaching that class in Santa Rosa, and that's the foundation class, but there's a whole series of classes that take you through everyday, and they're all called Everyday Life. Mm-hmm. So there are different teachings that help you to take what you learn into your everyday life. And they are sequential, and they build, one builds on the other, and they get deeper and deeper from contentment to joy to fearlessness to wisdom.
Wow.
Those are the four. So.
And the center is actually located here in Santa Rosa. Well, the Santa Rosa Center.
Yeah, the Santa Rosa Center is on 8th Street, between 8th and 9th, and between Davis and Wilson on the west side of town near Railroad Square. And we actually not only have this evening event, but we have open sitting three times a week with a meditation instruction for free. Anyone can come. And there will be a meditation instructor there who will sit down one-on-one and take you through the technique. And then you can practice with others, which is always very beneficial because it's hard to do this, even though it's so simple. It's very simple.
But it isn't easy.
It's not easy. It's an interesting thing to realize. So it's helpful to be with others. That kind of gives you that enjoyment. And our website is www.santarosa.shambhala, and Shambhala is spelled shambhala.org.
And Irv, does the Sonoma chapter follow the same core classes? Do you guys kind of
We do, and we also share some classes between the two centers. So, for example, this class that Barbara and I are teaching now, Meditation in Everyday Life, any one of you is welcome to join us. The next class starts next Sunday, the 28th, at our center in Sonoma on West Napa Street, 255 West Napa,
okay.
And at 10:45 a.m., and so you're welcome to come to that. And our website address is sonoma.shambhala.org.
Okay. All right. And is there a cost involved?
There is. We charge for our program so that we can keep the doors open and the lights on. For this class, we charge $110 for the complete series. And but also it's important to note that we never turn anyone away for lack of funds. And so, you know, we have a generosity policy that you can read about. But basically, you know, people can make an offering that fits within their budget.
Mm-hmm. And Eric's program on Wednesday night in Santa Rosa is asking
$10. Yeah.
And it'll probably be a couple of hours. A
couple of hours, seven to nine.
7 to 9, yeah.
That's a $10 worth and well spent, isn't
it? I think so. I hope that people come.
Sure.
Yeah.
And anything else that you'd just like to say about the Shambhala Center and what it offers to people?
Well, I will say one thing that I've found, you know, a wonderful, since the time that I've been involved with Shambhala, I found a wonderful community, not only in Sonoma and Santa Rosa, but throughout the Bay Area and actually beyond. We have an organization called Northern California Shambhala that includes the seven centers that Barbara mentioned throughout the Bay Area. And teachers come to visit, and we go to, you know, whichever center has a program that we're interested mm-hmm. in. So we actually have built a community not only in our centers but throughout the Bay Area and actually throughout the world, because we also have retreat centers, which we call land centers, in Colorado, Vermont, in Canada, in France, and to the degree that that people would like to spend more intensive retreat time for a week, 2 weeks, a month, or even longer, mm-hmm. they can go to those centers.
So is there kind of an overarching website like shambhala.org?
Exactly.
There is, yes.
That would.
And you can find any center in the world through that. And I wanted to add that just that we're a very welcoming and warm place that usually, I mean, as far as I know, everyone who comes there is greeted and is made to feel, you know, at home, and any questions I have are answered. And we really try to engage people and find out about them and get to know them.
Good. Yeah. Well, again, it's coming up on October 24th. Correct? That's the
yes.
October 24th.
This coming Wednesday.
It's Eric Spiegel. It is an introduction to meditation specifically for the LGBT community, but not exclusive.
That's
Anyone
right.
is welcome to come. I just think it's great that you're even opening your doors and offering it specifically to people of the LGBT community, and to realize that there's applications across the board, whether you're dealing in the death and dying or whether you simply are looking to be more yourself and feel comfortable in who you are. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
No, it's really a pleasure.
Truly my
here.
Pleasure. Thank you for the good work you're doing. And I look forward to actually coming and seeing you sometime
soon,
too.
Can't wait to
Please
see
come.
You there.
I will. Thanks
okay.
again. Next month on Outbeat Collage, Gary and I will be talking with local musician and auto mechanic Maria Del Su. She is the owner of Out West Garage in Petaluma. Not just about cars, but she's got a 5-piece garage band as well, so it's going to be a fun evening. As always, my thanks to Mary Moore Campagna for engineering this evening. To you, our Outbeat listeners and supporters, tune in every Sunday, 8 p.m. for Outbeat Radio. I'm Michaela Kennan. Reminding you to have a great week. As always, be real, be remarkable, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for tuning in.